Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of Tuning Into the C-Suite podcast, where editors of Managed Healthcare Executive chat with healthcare executives in the C-Suite and professionals. Our conversations are about the most important issues facing American healthcare today, such as its cost, effectiveness, delivery, organization, and its fairness. Listen in, learn a lot.
Well, hello, everybody. My name is Peter Werrewine, and I am senior editor at Managed Healthcare Executive. And today I have the pleasure of speaking to Deborah Cooper. She's a risk specialist at a medical malpractice company called Caveras. And we're going to discuss vaccine hesitancy and a little bit why a medical malpractice company would be thinking about that and why it would be on their radar. So thanks for joining me today.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
And as we discussed before the camera started to roll, so to speak, you're talking to us from the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. So still a little chilly there, but I'm sure it's going to be green soon. So, could you just tell us a little bit about Caveras and a little bit about your role there before we get into the matter at hand?
Right. So I am a risk management specialist, and I cover a lot of clients that we protect with our insurance. And the reason why our insurance is interested in this, obviously, is that the policyholders that we have patients that have a lot of issues associated with COVID-19. First off, when the questions started coming out, we needed to make sure that we could address those appropriately, trying to prevent loss, trying to help them, and all of that. So the reason why I'm involved is I not only am a registered nurse of 30 plus years, but I'm also a board certified infection preventionist. And so I'm probably the only infection preventionist with our company. I lead our pandemic response team that we started back in May to address all of the COVID-related issues. Obviously, when COVID first came out and we were reading about that, there was a risk alert that I wrote that we put out in January about COVID. And that's kind of how I got tapped into it because of my background with infection prevention.
Right, right. So what are there some particular malpractice exposures or issues with respect to COVID-19 for the people that you insure? And I assume that you're insuring providers of various sorts, correct?
We insure providers and we insure hospitals. Mm-hmm. And so the exposures may be related to a failure to have appropriate safety measures in place. People may come in and feel that the provider doesn't have adequate equipment for their patients or for their staff. And that may end up being an issue somewhere down the road, particularly if it ended up in a transmission. Of course, how can you prove that the transmission occurred when they were in the office? There was a lot of issues associated with providers having to close their practices because of the mandates that were out there. You know, people weren't able to go to work. Hospitals had limitations. And so there's potential risks associated with that as well.
So what are you advising people now in terms of the issues of COVID and medical malpractice? You know, you put out this advisory in January. So what have been the developments since?
Oh my gosh, almost daily developments, you know, as more information is gleaned from the research and the data that's been compiled, there's more and more information available. I mean, we didn't even know initially how it was spread. Did it come from a snake? You know, what was going on with all of that? And so really the recommendations that we make are based on best practice, CDC recommendations. You know, there's a lot of concern about the vaccine. There's social media misinformation. It's very difficult to combat somebody's opinion when they are reading in the media or talking with neighbors and trying to get them to accept the fact that a vaccine is available. I think that some of the times people have a hesitancy to accept the vaccine because it's not FDA approved, it's emergency use authorization. They have misconceptions about what they've read in the media, all the fear mongering that went on associated with the different vaccines. They read about the occasional side effects that are not that great, and then they think that's going to happen to them. So I guess if from a perspective of the provider, they need to make sure that they're well educated about the vaccine. They need to build on the trust relationship that they have with the patient. They need to be informed about the vaccine and they need to listen. A lot of times vaccine hesitancy is associated with a lack of understanding. And so it's important that the provider knows about the vaccine so they can answer questions that the patient may have. And the concern is if a provider fails to ask that question, they may miss an opportunity to vaccinate a patient. Another concern with vaccine hesitancy, it isn't just related to patients, it's healthcare workers too. And so what would happen then if the provider was vaccine hesitant? May that provide a subtle message to a patient? And the patient may say, yeah, I was thinking about getting that, but I had the idea or the feeling that my provider wasn't interested in doing a vaccination for himself. So why would I want to get a vaccine for me?
Yeah, I was reading a Kaiser Family Foundation report last week, and one of the and it's a tracking survey, 11,000 some people, and one of the takeaways from the survey was that healthcare providers, presumably in many cases physicians, are the most trusted messengers when it comes to vaccines. So there's definitely a role in the provider sort of building acceptance of a vaccination. Now, that same poll or survey also identified sort of some lumpiness or in demographic lumpiness in terms of who's hesitant, who's outright resistant to vaccination. And one thing that's sort of been interesting that's emerged, and I don't know whether you have any thoughts on this, is that people who identify as Republicans seem to be there's a fairly large percentage of them, roughly a third, who don't intend to get the vaccine. And there's sort of like so much else in life these days, there's become a political caste has developed around vaccination. And you're in Michigan, which is, where vaccination has become an active political issue. I'm just wondering what sort of thoughts you have about that, and what, if anything, could be done by providers to combat that.
I think that the emphasis on the vaccination is the issue and not maybe someone's political understanding or belief. I don't think that the vaccination should be or the vaccine should be politicized in any way, shape, or form. There should be concentration on the benefits, not only to the patient that's going to get vaccinated, but if there's a little bit of hesitancy, you can extend that to your family, your grandparents, and then also the community at large. That's a concern that providers have. If we don't vaccinate or have high rates of vaccination, then my community is going to have a lot of transmissibility of this terrible virus, and our hospital is going to be overwhelmed. And we're seeing that now, especially in Michigan with the variant of concern, that B.1.1.7 variant from COVID-19. So I think that it's imperative that we not look at a political belief or standing, but we concentrate on the benefits of the vaccination and then find out if they're hesitant, why. I can't say with any certainty that someone would say, well, I'm hesitant to get vaccination because I'm a Republican. But I do think that whole thing leading up after December and the election, I think there was a lot of issues that were going on in politics and a lot of finger pointing, and some people just started recognizing that I'm gonna go with that, that's gonna be their stance, the Republican issue or Democratic issue or whatever. I never really get into that, to be honest. I don't look at a political party. I look at other issues like the, cultural or psychosocial or maybe spiritual or religious reasons, maybe even medical reasons why somebody doesn't want to get vaccinated, whether it's an absolute refusal or if it's a hesitancy. And so it's important to have knowledge about the vaccine and address those issues. Obviously, if it's a medical issue, you can't get it, if you have an allergy or something like that. So.
And what is Caveras's role been in terms of helping providers communicate effectively with patients?
Oh my goodness. We actually we have a helpline. And so initially in the very beginning, we were getting hundreds of calls about COVID from physicians' offices. What do we do? What practices do we put in place? My patients are asking this. How do we answer that? And we actually started a spreadsheet. So from that spreadsheet, we would develop tools. Maybe we would develop a RISC-E, which is a publication that addresses specific concerns that people have as far as the emergency use authorization, excuse me, vaccines that came out. We provided a RISC-E on the information associated with the Pfizer vaccine, the Moderna vaccine, the J&J vaccine, so that they would have information about that readily available. As soon as it became available for use, we had a RISC-E out there for that. Primarily, we started a COVID-19 resource center. It was public facing, so it wasn't just for our policyholders, but anybody could log into our website and access that. There were claims-related resources that were available. There were underwriting resources that were available. For example, what happens if my practice is not able to be open because of the restrictions? How am I going to handle my premium? So we just open it up from every aspect in our company to the public and our policyholders at large. I mean, we're all in this together, right? So we want to be there as a first go-to source for information that's current and accurate. And that's what we did.
And there isn't any active medical malpractice issue with respect to vaccines, are there? There's no way that a provider would be have any sort of malpractice exposure in their area of vaccines, would they?
Not that I can think of, to be honest. I haven't heard of anything, not to say that it doesn't exist, but at least in my company, I haven't heard anything at all about a vaccine exposure, vaccine related exposure for a provider. Giving a shot is giving a shot, and the most important thing is to provide the patient who is going to be vaccinated with information about the vaccine. So I would encourage any provider, whether it be local health department, what have you, that they make sure that that patient has information available to the fact sheet that comes out with each emergency use authorization provides a lot of data. They should be available to answer questions. Sometimes that's difficult. If they have a vaccine clinic and there's 200 people going through, it's hard to just spend 10 minutes with each patient and answer their questions. But a lot of times patients do research on their own. So.
Yes, and do you have any thoughts on how best to communicate the information about the benefits and the risks? I mean, there are some risks to these vaccines, and of course, with the J&J vaccine is on hold because of a possible association with blood clots, but it's always sort of interesting an issue about how one communicates those issues. Do you have any best practices about how to do that?
I think a really good thing that a provider could do, it seems to me that everybody seems to have a patient portal. They could use their patient portal and direct their patients to concise resources. You know, for example, they could direct them to the CDC, a website about vaccines, because the CDC has a lot of information about that, you know, include links so they can just click and go. Vaccine information sheets, the fact sheets. They can talk to them about V-safe. If you did get a vaccine, then you can actually connect with the CDC on your, an application goes right on your smartphone so that the patient feels that they have some control, you know, over what's happening afterwards, and make sure if something happened to me that somebody's going to know about it. They also have the vaccine adverse event reporting system theirs, and anybody can report to that. It's strictly voluntary. When I got my vaccine, I signed up for VSafe and I got a daily message. I was able to answer that. I was feeling fine and everything else. Best practices is to provide information to the patient that they can access. And if they have a question, they certainly can contact the provider and get those questions answered.
Yeah, I think there's an old saying about sunlight being the best disinfectant.
UV lighting.
Yeah, and I guess an analogous phrase might be about information being the best solvent on sort of misinformation and misunderstanding. So it's going to be interesting to see how it rolls out from here. How are you feeling about the uptake of the vaccine in the country? I checked this morning and I think roughly 40% of Americans now have gotten at least one dose, and 25% are fully vaccinated. Where do you see things going?
I see the vaccination rates increasing, to be honest. I mean, in the healthcare, I'm a registered nurse in the healthcare community. A lot of people are a little bit hesitant to do that. There's been two hospitals now, it was in Houston and then also in Montana, there were health systems that implemented mandatory vaccinations. I wasn't sure how that was going to play out, but actually it's played out pretty well for those facilities. I think that as time passes and more information is gleaned from VSafe or VAERS or any kind of reporting systems, and they find out more vaccinations are given, less side effects are happening. People who get the vaccination may, if they did end up getting sick, because efficacy is not 100%, you know, so there is always that risk. And so if they do end up getting COVID-19, even after they've been fully vaccinated, they're finding now that if that were the case, that the illness is less severe and hospitalizations are down. And so I think it's that sort of information that all of the public are going to hear. And they're going to make a determination based on, instead of back in December when the Pfizer and Moderna vaccine came out, where nothing was known about it, now we're many, many months down the road, and there's a lot more information that's available. And as people hear it works, their coworkers are getting vaccinated, their neighbors are getting vaccinated, their neighbors are getting COVID, and they see what happens. I think that you're going to find that the acceptance of vaccinations will improve as more data is known.
And what do you think, could you share with us the name, do you know the names of the facilities that hospitals that did mandatory vaccination? And what do you think about that as a strategy that providers should or should not use?
Sure. I can tell you what the names of those hospitals are. If you just give me 1 second, because I've been watching what was going on.
Yes.
Sure. 1 second. So Great Falls, Montana-based Benefis Health System was one. That was most recently. And that is a, let's see, it implemented mandatory COVID vaccinations. That was in Becker's. I read that in Becker's.
Yeah.
And then the other one was Houston Methodist. And Houston Methodist initiated that back in early April, I want to say. And then they came out on the 16th in Becker's, and they were talking to the CEO, asking the CEO, how's it going? And it was going fantastic. I mean, of all the people that they had vaccinated, it was something like, and I'm going to pull it up right now so I can actually give you that statistic. It was, I want to say something like 96%.
Wow.
Yeah, it was amazing.
So do you think that's a strategy that providers should use, or do you have any thoughts on that?
Are you talking about mandating COVID-19?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think that we're going to find that. I actually have been watching to see if that was going to happen, because way back early on when they had these vaccines available, Dr. Fauci and others were saying that we're never going to mandate COVID-19 vaccinations. And also, you know, there's the whole issue with the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. They updated their COVID-19 guidelines specific to COVID-19 that now they can allow that. But of course, there's a lot of issues associated with the anti-discrimination laws and ADA and all of that. So that is probably why people are starting to mandate. I know that years ago, when influenza vaccines were starting to be mandated in hospitals, nurses threw a fit. You know, they did not want to be mandated. You know, they did not want to be told that they had to wear it. And so hospitals had to make adjustments. And they said, okay, if you don't get influenza vaccine, then you're going to have to wear a mask all day long. And they chose to do that. I even remember there were lawsuits out of California where nurses were saying, don't force me to get a vaccine. This is a whole different ballgame.
Yep. Yeah.
You know, this is a whole different ball game. And I think that, you know, the whole hope for herd immunity, which we don't know what percentage of the population needs to be vaccinated in order to reach that. The whole hope for herd immunity is to get as many people vaccinated as possible. And then maybe we'll reach that stage where the transmissibility is going to be a lot lower because everybody's protected against it, assuming it was 100% effective.
Yeah,
you know, and then the variants come in, of course, too. So
I think built into herd immunity is, you know, I think the number that I've seen most often is 70% have to be vaccinated. But that actually does allow for some free riders who can stay unvaccinated, and they benefit. And that's just sort of the dynamic of transmission.
And, you know, it depends on the virus. You know, the herd immunity percentage of the population differs depending on what the pathogen is. So measles is a different herd immunity level than is something else, for example. We don't know what that level is here. You know, we don't know about, I know they have breakthrough infections and sometimes people can get it again. They said it's extremely rare. I'd like to really read a case study on that to find out if they truly were, if it wasn't influenza, you know, instead
right.
of COVID. So.
Yeah. And I think you're right. The variants add a whole big unknown factor in the equation, because if they're more transmissible, maybe that changes the herd immunity.
And it brings us right back to our December situation. You know, we didn't know what was going on with the coronavirus at that time. We were learning as we went, and now we've got not one variant, but we've got like five or more variants that are coming in. And the variant of concern that we're looking at here in Michigan, like I said, is that B117. We've got the highest number. I think it was April 5th. We had like 11,000 cases of COVID, new cases of COVID, and 70% of those were associated with the variant. That's pretty scary, you know. So fear mongering that goes on in social media, will fear mongering help people get vaccinated? You know, I always wonder about that. It can definitely make people not want to get vaccinated. Oh, yeah. You know, my son got measles, mumps and rubella and ended up with Guillain-Barré or whatever, swine flu, you know, right. or developmental disabilities. But man, you hear younger and younger people are getting ill, and that may be an impetus to get people vaccinated. But I think you're right, Peter. You were talking about the importance of education. the more aware and educated the public is about truth associated with the vaccines, I think the better off we are in encouraging vaccinations and having acceptance.
Yeah, I think, you know, of course, the question is, there are some people who don't believe health authorities and are deeply committed to sort of different ideas. So it's a very difficult.
It's a conundrum.
Yeah, a very, very difficult thing. And but we do have two good vaccines. Very likely, Johnson & Johnson will get rolled out. And
I read that they're going to unpause that on 23rd of April.
Yeah. And hopefully we can make some progress here. So thank you for sharing your thoughts. It's interesting to me how, in some sense, COVID-19 has affected every part of the healthcare sector, including a company like Caveras and a medical malpractice company that one wouldn't think this would be sort of central to what you do. But it just shows how sort of all-encompassing this pandemic has become and is in terms of healthcare in this country. So thank you.
Thank you so much, Peter. It was nice meeting you.
Thanks for tuning into this week's episode of Tuning Into the C-Suite Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts and follow Managed Healthcare Executive on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. For more information on Managed Healthcare Executive, visit our website at www.managedhealthcareexecutive.com.